Unlike a lot of studies that look at mothering in a particular disease, so you know, there's some that, you know, they'll specifically look at mothering with cancer. We decided to just leave a really broad definition of illness. So some participants had chronic or life-limiting diseases like heart failure, spinal damage, or cancer. One had a terminal brain tumour. But some had mental illnesses like schizophrenia or postnatal depression. And a few had acute and time-limited illnesses requiring surgery, for instance, pancreatitis secondary to an inflamed gallbladder. It didn't seem to matter what type of illness. There was some sort of follow-through effect stemming from the disruption. For example, women very ill following childbirth could have trouble initiating breastfeeding, and this could then go on to have long-term effects of their view of themselves as mothers.
One story in particular really stood out to me, and this was, her name was Unity in the study. Could you tell me a little bit about her?
She had schizophrenia, and she decided that she was going to have a baby. So she went off all of her psych drugs because she was scared that it would harm the growing child. Went out, found herself a nice-looking man and got herself pregnant. And she was living with a friend, and I think the friend had some mental health issues as well. And one day there was a community health worker visiting the house who noticed that, and this is in her own words, that she was actually quite mad and deranged. And so she ended up being hospitalised. And she told stories of there was a lot of pressure on her early in the pregnancy to actually abort the baby, which she resisted. I think they even took her to court. And, of course, this is all from the woman's perspective. But she persevered, and she ended up in a mother and baby unit, and they assisted her with those early mothering skills got her stabilised back on her medications until that they felt that she was actually stable enough to go home. And she had like some really interesting side stories too. You know, she discussed that when she was quite unwell, picking her daughter up from I think her father paid for the little girl to go to quite an exclusive private school. And, of course, she's gone to pick her up and all the clothes are inside out and she's got a tea cosy on her head. So there was a lot of stigma and a lot of feeling really judged by other mothers. But the one thing that I really loved about Unity was her story. It was a love story. And her daughter was at about 16 at the time that I interviewed her. And you could tell by the way that she talked about her that it was an incredibly close mother-daughter bond. And this daughter that she deliberately set out to get was the very best thing that ever happened in her life.
So she took quite a risk going off those drugs to have that baby.
Yeah, and I think it's quite a common thing. Other ladies in the study, there was one with epilepsy, and some of the drugs that women take, the anti-seizure drugs, can be quite damaging. So there's that negotiation with the medical team or the treating team about what you can take and what you can't take and things like that.
Because how do you balance the mother's life against an unborn child? That's the ultimate debate, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there was another lady that was quite ill. I think she had, I can't remember, it's fibrosis. She was actually down for a heart and lung transplant, but she didn't realise she was pregnant. And so, of course, she'd been having all of these drugs and experimental treatments lots and lots of x-rays and things like that. And she did wonder later whether that was why her little daughter had autism. So there's all that sort of soul-searching that goes on.
In the study, how did the women define what a good mother was?
Out of all the women, there was only one that was really pragmatic and sort of recognised that she'd been the best mother that she could be. The majority of the women felt that they'd failed their children in some way. But one of the things that I really like about the methodology that I use, storytelling, is that even though at the beginning of the stories they'd be telling me all that, well, you know, this happened and I couldn't do this, but generally all of their stories came full circle. And so there's actually a theme at the end of the findings which talks about how women attributed positive outcomes for their children to their illness. So, for instance, you know, one woman saying, he's really smart, he does really well at school, and that's because I spent so much time reading to him, and I think that that's made a big difference.
I think another woman was saying that she felt bad because her kids did more chores than normal kids, but at the same time they ended up being independent.
Yeah, and from a mother who never made her children do any chores when they were little, I'm regretting it now. So, yeah, but the physical side of the mothering was a really big deal, and it was really interesting. I can't tell you how many women said this exact phrase, which was, I can't go outside and kick a ball with him. And I found this really interesting because I've got a son and a daughter, and I don't think I've ever been outside to kick a ball.
There have been, you know, normal parents out there who never go outside with their kids.
Yeah, yeah. So that's always relegated to male members, you know, go and kick a footy with your dad or your uncle or your brother or whatever. But what it said to me was that the women actually had a distorted view of what, you know, normal mothers do.
My guess is that being sick kind of puts a magnifying glass on what you can and can't do with your kids.
That's exactly right. Yeah, well, you mightn't think about it if you're just a normal busy mum, but when you can't do things, I think that's when you really notice them. Breastfeeding was a really big issue. There's a lot of moral rhetoric around breastfeeding. And if you're a good, and I put that inverted commas, you know, the word good mother, you breastfeed. However, some women couldn't due to the medications they needed to keep taking. Some had their breastfeeding interrupted by illness and couldn't continue with it. And there was a lot of angst around that, around either the inability or, you know, breastfeeding being ceased early.
Did the women feel like they could always emotionally connect with their children?
Emotional connection varied. Some women felt that they were closer to their children due to the illness, but others felt that it had driven a wedge between them. There was one lady, some of these stories were quite retrospective. So I, in addition to not having sort of limits on illnesses, I didn't really have any limits around the time between the illness and the interview. So I had some women that had sort of newborn babies up to women who had adult children that were sort of retrospectively looking back on their life. And that was the really interesting part of was that, because then they could actually reflect on how that had affected their connection with their children throughout their life.
Was it, so if they couldn't connect with their children when they're young, did it have an impact later on in life?
Yeah, definitely. So for instance, this one lady, she was actually, her mother died of tuberculosis when she was a little girl, and then she was hospitalised for tuberculosis. I think the little boy might have been 3, or he was a baby, I'm sorry, I can't remember. But quite young anyway, and she was devastated, you know, but she didn't want to leave him with her husband because she didn't feel that he was a warm man. And I think her neighbour came to her rescue, if I remember rightly. But she was hospitalised for a really long time, and they removed one of her lungs. And she told this beautiful story about how friends used to bring the little boy to the hospital, but he wasn't allowed in, or into the sanitarium, they called it. But she'd stand at this window and she'd be waving madly at this little boy, and she said she could see him looking up and he didn't know who she was. She's just this strange woman, you know, waving madly. And so throughout the course of her life, when she was, you know, released from hospital and resumed that relationship, I think she went above and beyond with her mothering with him. And as a consequence, she blatantly told me, there's no mother that's got a relationship like I have with my son. And that's very contrasting to, there was another woman that had a mental illness and she fought her husband for custody on and off, and you know, and she sort of told the story of, you know, she's got one son and they're not very close and he's really angry all the time, you know. Another lady was out of touch with her, again, her adult son, and she was bewildered. She'd been hospitalised with cardiac problems for, I think, off and on for about a year. And they had a nanny so that the children could still be in the house, but she really felt that period of their lives had deeply affected the bond that she could have with her son.
You mentioned a little bit earlier the husbands. A lot of these women were not entirely satisfied with their husbands in the caretaker role.
There were some issues. Some women had problems with their husbands either not being supportive and not helpful. Generally, if the husbands, and this extended to their mothers a lot too, if they were supportive and really helpful, you didn't hear a lot about them. But if they if there were issues, then you heard about it and heard about it and heard about it.
One of the big findings out of this was the mother's feeling of guilt well.
Yeah.
What does that stem from?
Mothering is guilt. Ask any mother. Guilt's a huge thing. Women generally, once you're a mother, an awful lot of your self-esteem, you know, it's your primary role. You know, I'm an academic, you know, I'm a partner, I'm a lot of different things, but probably, you know, my primary role is as a mother. So when you're at work, it doesn't matter what I'm doing, the children are always in your mind, you know. I think fathers can tend to go to work and just switch off. You know, when they're at work, they're at work, where women will still be thinking about pickups and drop-offs and what they're going to cook for dinner and doing that planning. It doesn't seem to matter how far we've moved, you know, into the 21st century, women are still primarily responsible for children. And if anything goes wrong with children, it's always the mother that gets looked at. You know, if a kid's playing up, you know, he's a teenager and he gets arrested or something, oh, you know, from a single mother or whatever, there's rarely any commentary around the father's role. And so women, of course, imbibe that, you know, and everything hangs on your goodness as a mother. So if you're unable to fulfill that, or you feel that you've let your children down, then it can be really detrimental to women's self-esteem.
What about health services? How did doctors and nurses respond to these women trying to strive to still be mothers while sick in hospital.
So again, when health professionals were supportive, they rarely got a mention. However, every slight, every incident of poor care was remembered vividly and recounted in detail. And this is something that we need to remember. You need to be aware that that mothering is a primary identity for women, and that they don't stop being a mother when they become a patient. And that concern that they've got for their children, that permeates everything. And it can affect their treatment decisions. For example, if women feel themselves deteriorating, they'll actually stay at home and self-medicate for as long as they can to avoid being separated by their children. So during assessment of women, one of the questions should be, do you have children? And health professionals need to explore care arrangements, and they need to identify if there's any needs around referral. And even just speaking with women about their children, it validates them and it acknowledges that, you know, they've got this life beyond treatment.